All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. We're on Chaos Radio Austin and the Liberty Radio Network. And as you well know, Jim Loeb has a posse. He's the Washington Bureau Chief at Interpress Service, and he keeps a group of guys working for him that are among my very favorite journalists. Of course, Gareth Porter, who I've interviewed more than 100 times now, and also Eli Clifton. And Marsha Cohen has written a lot of great stuff there. Daniel Luban, of course, and our next guest, Ali Gharib. Welcome back to the show, Ali. How are you doing?
Thanks, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And you flatter us a little too much here.
Oh, no way. Listen, for those who don't know, Jim Loeb has been hunting neocons for 35 years. Richard Perle and Douglas Feith and Paul Wolfowitz and these most horrible lying warmongers and the war party that you guys cover day to day at the Loeb Log and at Interpress Service. The very same group of people trying now to lie us into war with Iran, since they were already successful in lying us into war with Iraq, which ended up benefiting Iran, but I guess that's neither here nor there. Maybe that's just a better excuse to invade Iran or to bomb them, is that somehow they won the Iraq war right out from under us. But I was wondering about, you know, there's so many wars going on. It seems like the danger of a war with Iran for now has kind of diminished, and yet when I read the Loeb Log, I see that the war party has not missed a single beat here. They are keeping up, doing everything they can to lay the groundwork for war with Iran. Is that pretty much right?
Yeah, well, excuse me. I'm working on a post now about, you know, in the past few days, there's been a bunch of Israeli pronouncements that they think that the Iranian nuclear bomb has been delayed by sabotage, namely the Stuxnet virus and assassinations of Iranian nuclear scientists. But it doesn't seem that the U.S. neoconservatives have gotten the memo. You know, that these pronouncements came from no less of credible Israeli sources than Meir Dagan, the outgoing head of the Mossad. Ehud Barak said something about it recently. And so did Moshe Elon, who's TV's Netanyahu's deputy prime minister. And these guys are coming out saying, you know, 2014, 2015 is the new date for when Iranians have a bomb. Of course, they still want to keep the pressure on. But they're, you know, even Barak said, you know, that there's still a chance that diplomacy can work. Yet, you know, Jennifer Rubin is in the Post today saying sanctions and diplomacy can't work. It's time to start thinking about other measures.
Mm-hmm. You know, Meir Dagan, it's been reported before, I guess back in 2005, said that, you know, he was well aware that the Iranians weren't working on a bomb and that it would be years and years before they could have a bomb if they wanted one, and that I think he wasn't even afraid of a first strike back then. And yet it sounds like now this time this is a much more official pronouncement. That was, you know, an interview with Haaretz or something. But you're saying that the Netanyahu government now is saying, well, they want to take credit and say, well, we assassinated enough people that now we don't have to worry about an Iranian bomb as an imminent threat?
Well, to some extent, yeah. Actually, Dagan's comments were delivered in a briefing that he gave, and Haaretz got a copy of a summary of the meeting, but then Reuters got a transcript. So we have his actual comments now. But the Barak comments were public, and Yolan's comments are public as well. But yeah, I think that they do want to take credit, and I don't know if it's deserved. I don't know
fine with me, as long as they're admitting that there is no secret nuclear weapons program and that the one that is a nuclear program in Iran is not a weapons program and all that. If they recognize these facts in their arguments about what policy should be, I think that's a great step forward.
No, not yet. No one from Israel has recognized that. I think the speculation is still, I mean, it's not even speculation. It's almost taken as a fact in Israel and the U.S. I mean, I think that there are strong signs that Iran is pushing for a breakout capability, which I think, as far as hardliners in the U.S. and Israel are concerned, is no distinction from a bomb, but But, you know, I don't think that that hypothesis is totally screwy.
Oh, yeah,
but,
no, I agree with that, too. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But it's still not a matter of flipping a switch, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and the way that it's presented is a fact that Iran has a nuclear weapons program and is actively trying to build to the completion of a nuclear weapon is a questionable assertion because there hasn't been any hard evidence of it yet. You know, as we learned from the lead up to the Iraq War, hard evidence actually matters.
Yeah, you'd think, but maybe not. Well, so now, when Jennifer Rubin and these kooks at Commentary and the Weekly Standard and so forth write about this,
don't forget, Jennifer Rubin's at the Washington Post now.
Oh, God, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know why that's surprising. It's Fred Hyatt's editorial page, right? So, yeah. I didn't realize that. I don't read the editorial page at the Post. I don't have the stomach for it.
Yeah,
that's why I turned to the low blog. You guys keep track for me.
She does a blog, but occasionally her pieces end up in the print edition.
Mm.
But yeah, she's at the Post now. I wrote an article about her her rise there in the Columbia Journalism Review.
Ah. Yeah, wow, that's terrible. So wait a minute. Now, is she denouncing Ehud Barak, or is she just ignoring him and sticking to her script?
No, she ignored those altogether. She ignored those altogether. It's funny, you know, Elliot Abrams and Jonathan Tobin writing in Commentary. Elliot Abrams has a new blog at CFR and the Council on Foreign Relations. And Jonathan Tobin, writing a Commentary, both acknowledged the comments and said, you know, we still got to push full steam ahead. But Jennifer Rubin doesn't even acknowledge it. She's got sort of a kind of inclination, it seems, to leave out critical context that just may cast doubt on her story.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's how it goes. I forget if it was you or something Daniel Lubon wrote at the Low Blog about, I think it was one of yours, where Wall Street Journal editorial just begins with, Iran has warned us that they're making nukes or whatever, where they just outright lie.
I did write that. The Wall Street Journal let off an editorial that ever since Iran announced that it's building a nuclear bomb, which, I mean, it's just a lie.
That's how you do it, though, right?
Iran has never announced such a thing.
That's how you do it. You don't make it the point of the sentence. You just make that the because of this, therefore that, change the subject, move on. But you just lay it as the false premise for the rest of the debate. It works perfect every time.
It's a logical fallacy that's called begging the question, which is often misappropriated to meaning that, like, that suggests that we should ask about. That's not what it actually means. Begging the question is a logical fallacy where the conclusion is breathlessly stated in the given part of the logical construction.
Right.
Sorry, I have a philosophy master's, you know, so.
Well, you know, I was terrible at geometry in high school, but still, I understand what a proof is. And, you know, assertion A, B, and C actually have to have something to them, or else it doesn't matter what you say in your conclusion, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, and so here's the other thing I wanted to ask you about. I don't know if we'll have time to get too far into this, but we could start anyway. You had a piece here on the 5th. Domestic political pressure spiked Ahmadinejad's fuel swap push. And this was about how Ahmadinejad wanted to take Obama up on the swap deal, but was thwarted by hardliners inside Iran. Is that right?
Yeah, that was from the 2009 swap deal, and so things were still a mess politically in Iran then, and that came via a WikiLeaks cable from Turkey, I believe, where Turkish representatives had told Americans that they were under the impression that Ahmadinejad had wanted to push it, but had been thwarted by the hardliners, which I wrote a piece recently in Tehran Bureau. That Ahmadinejad came out a few weeks ago and said these talks coming up at the end of this month in Istanbul are historic opportunities.
Yeah. All right, I'm sorry. We're going to have to hold it right there. It's Ali Gharib from loblog.com, Interpress Service. We'll be right back. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Ali Gharib from loblog.com, also antiwar.com/blog. We reprint a lot of this stuff, the daily Iran talking points and more. And that's the war party's talking points and their coverage of them. We anti-war people are too honest to center up talking points to each other. Those are for liars. And Anyway, so we were talking about how Ehud Barak and Mayor Dagan and officialdom in Israel is admitting that they're not in danger of any nuclear weapons threat from Iran for years and years to come. Although I guess 2014 isn't that far, but they're always 3 or 4 years away, according to the Israelis. So that, I think, buys us a little time in terms of political pressure. But I wanted to ask you a little bit more about this piece that you did here about the internal pressure inside Iran that spiked Ahmadinejad's push to make the deal with Obama. And I was just wondering, you say that this is the 2009 push, but what month are we talking about here, or roughly speaking? I'm trying to remember the timeline of when Obama actually made the offer and the back and forth between him and the Iranians, such as it was before the deal was announced kaput.
I'm not sure exactly about the back and forth. I just pulled that from a WikiLeaks cable that was from November 09. So we're talking, a good solid 4 months after the elections, but things were still in total disarray then in Iran.
Right.
And this, of course, was right at the point when Obama was ramping up his engagement push. It just turned out to be bad timing, I guess.
Right. Well, it seemed like, though... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that that John Limbert, who was a foreign service officer who was taken hostage in Iran in 79, but, is incredibly reasonable commenting on Iran. And, this guy's a professor at the Naval War College, and he led the Iran desk at the State Department for Obama for about the first year of Obama's presidency. And, he always says that whenever we zig, they zag. And that's kind of been the case. And sometimes it's been the various governments doing those zigging and zagging, and sometimes it's just circumstances are overtaken by events. And I think that's what happened in late summer and fall and winter of 09. And it just turns out that I guess Ahmadinejad couldn't get the political support from hardliners to push the fuel swap deal.
Well, I guess I don't know enough about the internal politics in Iran and how hard he was pushing and all that, but I thought that the Iranians came back with a counteroffer that was basically the exact same deal, only they said, you give us the finished fuel rods from the French at the same time we're giving up our uranium to the Russians to be enriched to a higher place, that way, higher grade. That way, we know you are not going to rip us off. And that seemed like a pretty reasonable alternative position. And then it was just after that Obama pretended to bust Iran breaking their safeguards agreement by building the new facility at Qom, which it turned out they had declared 4 days before he pretended to bust them. And I just wondered, whether there was really any honest brokering going on the side of the Americans. And, I mean, did they even consider the counteroffer, which seemed pretty reasonable at the time, I thought?
I don't know. This is it's been a point of great debate kind of in the Mideast analyst community over whether Obama's engagement offers were serious. And there's been a lot of pushback from people in the administration and people close to the administration, which indicates to me that they take the allegations seriously. I don't know if that means whether there's a grain of truth to them or not, but I think that there certainly has been some disarray in Iran's policy. They're just like any other bureaucracy. The administration as a whole, and even within the State Department, there's various factions who have different views on how things should go down. So, it's difficult to paint the whole thing. I mean, Obama is ultimately responsible for setting policy, right? But it's difficult to say exactly what went down. There have been people that have alleged that Iran wasn't totally serious about engagement. Among them was Columbia professor Gary Sick, a former State Department official named Reza Marashi, who's at the National Iranian American Council. Flint and Hillary Leverett were great proponents of this view. I don't think that, that this has been a historically settled question yet.
Yeah. Well, it's always bothered me the way, even if you thought that, okay, a breakout capability is a dangerous thing or whatever, at least That could be a conversation based on relevant facts instead of just propaganda and fear-mongering and that kind of thing. And it seems like the Obama administration, at the very least, caved in. And rather than trying to actually accomplish their goal of working this out by December 31st, 2009, they wanted to show that the Iranians wouldn't come to the table or wouldn't bow to our wishes by that deadline, and then he could be seen as tough and putting on all the sanctions and all those things, and rather than just working the thing out. I mean, I don't know what the hardliners there want other than what all Iranian factions insist on, which is their right to enrich uranium on their own soil.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they want either. For the meantime, the official stated position of the Obama administration is still that the goal, their goal for negotiations is compliance with the UN Security Council resolution that,
right,
whether you like it or not, says that Iran has to suspend domestic enrichment. So that's the starting point. However, there have been signs from the administration recently. Hillary Clinton said in Bahrain a few months ago that Iran could maybe in the future be permitted to have domestic enrichment as long as it was under proper safeguards and inspections. Gary Samore, speaking at a neoconservative conference that I covered at the beginning of December, and Gary Samore is the Obama nonproliferation czar, said that while the goal is to get suspended Iranian enrichment, there's still a possibility of incremental or interim deals that would allow Iran to continue enrichment. I.e., this would be some kind of confidence-building measure that would be allowed to strike some kind of limited deal while at the same time saying, okay, we just want to get one part of this deal done and we're willing to talk about the rest of our goals later.
Hmm.
You can see all that stuff in my Tehran Bureau piece.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, are they really, it seems like they must just be walking it back because at the end of the day, as we all know, these facilities are already safeguarded by the IAEA, which continues to verify the non-diversion of declared nuclear material in Iran to any military or other special purpose, and they have a million times in a row. So what extra is there to be done?
That's true, but you have to remember that that there are some legitimate complaints about the levels of inspections. Iran has withdrawn from the additional protocols, which the Western negotiators in this scenario have put a great emphasis on. And while, you know, I'm not in any position to, I'm not a non-proliferation expert. I don't know all the ins and outs of the IAEA. I don't know what's going on either in these facilities in Iran, nor do I know what's going on in the halls of power in Washington, except for what, you know, the little pieces that I can glean from reading the same stuff everybody else can and maybe one or two other conversations. But beyond knowing that, I think that there are some legitimate concerns about the level of inspections on Iran, and yeah, I don't think it's totally unreasonable to ask for these things, but at the same time, I think it is totally unreasonable to not take into account any of Iran's needs in negotiation.
Right. Well, I wonder.
You know what I'm saying, Scott?
It's
a nuanced position, I know, which is tough, and it's a sort of a mealy-mouthed explanation, but
The only thing about it is that it seems to me like the nuclear issue is a red herring all along. It's not like Ehud Barak and Meir Dagan and Benjamin Netanyahu are just figuring these things out. It's always just been an excuse for regime change, just like Saddam's warehouse is full of sarin gas. Right?
Well, I think that that's certainly true when these criticisms come from some quarters of the Israeli right as well as the U.S. neoconservative right. I think that's certainly true that I don't know that all those people legitimately believe that Iran is some messianic apocalyptic cult. You know, maybe there's some among them who do, but I think for the most part, a lot of these people are smart enough to know that that's a well-exaggerated picture. But yeah, I think you're right that from some quarters, the nuclear issue is a red herring that's meant to squelch Iran's regional ambitions that have nothing to do with nuclear and non-nuclear state. They just have to do with regional power struggles.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. We got that lady, I never can pronounce her name, the new head of the Foreign Relations Committee in the House of Representatives.
I think it's Ileana Ross-Layton.
I'll hand it to you there. She's going to be leading foreign policy in the House of Representatives now and pushing Obama from the right from here on, not like he needed much help. So
Elliot Abrams is already giving her advice on his CFR blog.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm not even going to bother looking there, but I will keep my eye on loblog.com and antiwar.com/blog for all of Jim Loeb's posse. Thanks, Ellie. Oh, yeah. Appreciate that.